Welcome to another episode of There's Just Something About Kansas City, and I'll be damned. Look who's sitting right across the table from me. The one and only Max Floyd, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and old friend from way back in the
You're so pretty. You know, you really are. You could be on I like the guys. You're the guys that I used to watch sports with. And you're, you know, that had all that energy and all that stuff. And you could still be doing it, you know. You would wrestle a bear in the Channel 4 parking lot if you got some numbers, wouldn't you? You probably did, actually.
Oh, I probably
Somebody did. I looked out the window and somebody was doing that. You're like a leading man still. I'm like a character actor,
You know what? Leading men can't do without the character actor, okay? You know what I mean? You can't have too many leading men.
Yeah.
And I'm no leading man. Believe me, I've gone down the slide into Jell-O. At least, okay? I don't know about fighting a bear in the parking lot, but I've done some stupid
things. Did you ever kill anybody on the show, by the way?
No, not yet. Not yet. Nobody's died on set either, so we're in pretty good shape.
Day's young.
You bet. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right.
You okay?
I have a new job. I'd like to announce it here. I'm door-to-door selling bidets. Now, the demonstration is a little tricky. But, you know, we're so far behind the Far East and Europe and all that stuff on this kind of thing. So I think I'll do well. I'm not sure.
I think you're going to have some fun doing it, especially the demonstrations.
And I may go back in the Army, but I'm holding out for a training command. I'm not going to be a desk job, one or the other.
At least it's not encyclopedias. Okay, so you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about it. I think the first thing I want to find out from you is the Hall of Fame experience for you back in 95 and what it was like. And I mean, from the beginning of your career, did you ever think you'd end up in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio?
No, you know what? There was this girl, Bonnie Simmons, who worked with the progressive guys out of San Francisco, Donahue, and those guys who were sort of the forerunners, the grandfathers of classic rock and album-oriented rock. And Bonnie and I knew each other from Denver because she used to promote records and she was also on the radio and so forth. And she called me one day here in Kansas City, it was 95, I guess, and said the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is opening this year. And was it 95? Yeah, 95.
95.
And she said, we want you to go in as one of the pioneer jocks.
Wow.
And I said, okay. And at that time, she said, well, I'll need a little burp, little air check. So yeah. I sent it to her, and she sent it back and said, I can't use that. It's too, you know, suggestive or whatever. So I sent her another one, making fun of Moffitt, actually, is the one I sent her. So she liked that one. So, and then we went up to Cleveland when it opened, when the building opened, and did I guess a week of shows out beside the Hall of Fame out there. It's, I think it was September, something like that, and we just had a great time. Slacker, who we talked about earlier, was our advance man.
God bless him and God rest his soul.
Yes, and he was the advance man, and he got us. You know, we got to talk to everybody from Hugh Carey was one of the ones who were insulting him, and we got tired of that. So what we did was we followed. Mary somebody from the Supremes, Mary
Wilson.
Mary Wilson. We followed her around like we're stalking her, and we followed her from store to store. And she was very pretty, and we just we a bunch of stupid guys. Mm-hmm. There was three of us. Myself and Moffitt and TJ, and so we followed her in one of the apartment stores, and she looked around and said, "What are you doing?" And then we said, "Oh," and she said, "Stop in the name of love." And so we ran and left TJ there. So we would do that. We did all kinds. Sam Phillips, you got to talk Sam Phillips. You know the Sun guy,
who
discovered Elvis, and
exactly.
It was just. We had a great time. We just had a great time at the Hall of Fame, and at the concert that night was Chuck Berry and Hart and all these people.
Wow.
And it was great, and I was very pleased to be there, and I'm still there. I think I haven't met up there.
You're still there.
Okay, good.
You're still in Cleveland.
Still there, but the people they're putting in the Hall of Fame now, I don't know if I agree with that or not.
Really?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it's rock and roll anymore.
I got you.
You know, I mean, I'm sure there are people that are not in that should be in there. But
yeah.
It's Jan Winter, the guy out of San Francisco, or Rolling Stone, is a guy that, I'm sorry, he didn't do a good job as far as I'm concerned. But hey,
Yeah.
I'm there. That's all that matters.
You're in. That's all that counts. You know, and it's funny because who was it? Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
They were going to put her in. She says, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm in the Country Music Hall of Fame, and that's where I belong because I'm a country music lady.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I do. That's what I sing. And then she turned around and she did a rock album, right, in order to
give her some legitimacy. Have you heard Let It Be with Dolly Parton?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I love it. With McCartney singing with her.
Yeah, McCartney with her.
That's just outstanding.
Yeah. So that alone should get her into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But let's go back to Max Whitney Floyd down there in the Paris Deport, Texas area, right?
Well, I was in Paris is the bigger town, 25,000, and then Deport is the smaller town.
Yeah.
I started in Clarksville, Texas. I was 17. I was out of high school. I was going to college. I was valedictorian, actually, and I was going to college. But I went down to the station in Clarksville, KCAR, and I said, I want a job. I don't know how I got up the guts to do that. You know, I was 17 years old. And
you're the valedictorian.
So you're a smart guy. You know, we were in the sticks. It was the sticks. This station had an outdoor toilet. It's that far back. It was just right outside the control room, you know.
It's a good spot for
it. And the records then were like 2 minutes long, you know.
That's right.
So the guy that – he was my idol. The guy that hired me came up to my little town there where I lived and said, is there Max Lloyd here? And I said, yeah, you know. He said, well, we want to hire you. So I don't know how – I don't know. But I just did it. And the first thing he said to me was, never neglect your kidneys. Always go out to that toilet if you have to go. I said, okay,
do that. That's the one lesson you learned from your original boss?
Well, my mentors tell me things that I need to know. But he told me later, he said, you know, you need to go to Dallas and get a first phone, you know.
First class license.
Mm-hmm. First phone license because you can hang it up in the studio, mm-hmm. and stations need a first phone engineer.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I worked for a couple of places as chief engineer, which I didn't know anything about it. But I did that. And then I finally wound up at I was in Sherman, Texas.
Sherman.
Doing a Top 40 afternoon show. And the owner of the station had a mistress. And if he wanted to see her at 5 o'clock, he would bring in – or somebody would bring in a little toy guitar. And it played some song. I don't know what it played. Could have been Happy Birthday for all I know. And he'd make me wind that thing up on the air.
It was a cue for her to know that he was going to go.
We'll get back to Elvis in a minute. But first of all, this little thing. And when she'd hear it, she knew he was going to see her that night. Don't you always wonder? I want to own a station after that, right?
that is classic stuff.
Small town stations were fun.
Oh, I started in Grand Coulee, Washington.
Yeah.
Which is where the Grand Coulee Dam is. And Lake Roosevelt's right. Oh my gosh. All this was electric wires.
Didn't you have fun?
I had a great time.
Oh, listen.
And then I went to Lake Chelan, Washington, which was just down the road, and just doing radio. And,
in those days, you just kept your boxes because you just moved around.
Absolutely. Always an updated tape.
Yeah.
You know, because you knew eventually you had to go get
Send
a real
that thing
job.
Out. Yeah.
you had to go get a real job.
I worked
somewhere.
At one place, it was next to a barbershop, and the manager kept coming in and claiming we were putting hair on the records. So what? You put hair on the records. I saw you. You know what? I mean, it's nuts, man. It just, you know, we'd put tumbleweeds out in West Texas, put tumbleweeds under people's desks and stuff like that. I mean, it was just so much fun. Who cared?
We didn't care. We're getting paid.
Yeah.
You're getting paid for that. I lived when I was in Grand Coulee. I lived in the back of a junkyard. This is not in a yurt. You know, one of those round Russian yurts you see on the steps, you know, in Russia? It was a yurt. It's a round building. So
Why did you live there?
Because it was my first job. It was my first job in radio. Yeah. So, and the deal was you could go in there. I'll never forget this. If you had to sit down on your bidet, were selling earlier, if you had to sit down, you couldn't close the door. So you're sitting in there doing your morning constitutional, and you could see every square inch of where you lived.
And
you're going, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yeah, what am I doing? But you were happy to be on the air.
I was happy to be on the air.
As you know.
It was great.
Speaking of quoting my old friend Gordon McClendon, who grew up in Paris.
Texas.
Radio is – I love the name radio. I love to say radio. I love the smell of radio studios. I love everything about radio. Radio is the most intimate medium, I think, mm-hmm. because you turn on that microphone – and if you're live, and it's just you, and you got to talk to you out there, you know.
Right. And they're not just, there.
Oh.
They're not with you.
Oh, it's in here.
You have to imagine. Yeah.
It's exactly. just great. I mean, I love radio. I really do. I love radio. I always did. And television, you did a lot of it. And you did. I'm sure you did radio and television, too. Of course you did. But television is just a different kind of thing. Yeah.
It was so different because there's not long form. I mean, you're on for 4 hours, either morning drive, afternoon drive, or whatever, and it's long form. I mean, you've got to – I know the records clip in between, and, you know, you're playing or spinning the hits, you know, and type. But, you know, any time in between there, you're talking and you're trying to engage the audience and keep them with you.
In your sports thing – you sometimes they'll say to you, well, listen, we just need to give you 2 minutes tonight.
And we have weather. Really, we have weather every day. There were some days I didn't even have to go in because they knew it was a snowstorm.
Yeah.
It don't bother. You're not going to get any time anyway. So
yeah, I mean.
Just stay home.
It's just I sometimes, because you want to watch the sports and now they do it differently and everything.
Yeah, it's all
it's
different
fine,
now.
You know, but. It's just I just love radio, and I always did. And I worked in those small towns, and then, you know, I was doing nights in San Antonio at KONO, and I was going to be drafted, and
this is 1961.
61, right? I was going to be drafted, and the owner said, "Get your draft board transferred down here. I'll keep you out of the Army." I said, "No, you know what, Jack? I'm going to go." I took an extra year, took 3 years to get the school that I wanted, which is information school. I figured I'd wind up doing something good about that. But
yeah.
And it worked out, but it almost didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it almost didn't. It was.
Yeah. And I know a lot of guys don't like to talk about Vietnam. You were there. I know you're an advisor, but you were still carrying.
It
you had your M16 strapped to your back.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, they say, well, no, you're not in the fight. Well, you know, your boots are on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I fought that battle with a guy that I had in the Johnson administration who got me out of it. I called him. I said, they're trying to screw me, the Army here, you know. I have a signed letter here, and they're sending me to AIT, Advanced Infantry, and they're, you know, doing this. And he said, I'll take care of it. But don't tell anybody else because I don't want to mess around with it. So he did. He sent me, he got me out and sent me back to Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, and then I was shipped out to do mornings on American Forces Radio Munich.
Yeah.
And he'd have the CID, the CID boys come by every week and check me, make sure I was okay, and I could use their safe houses. And so I had a big on my little. Folder, I had a political influence written on there, you know, so I did all right after that. And I just did mornings for 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say you weren't Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam, were you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did well. They take me off the air when some dignitary would come to town. They'd say, why don't you take a couple of weeks off? So I did that. They really didn't know what they had with me. The major would call me in every morning and say, what did you say this morning? I'm getting called. So, well, you know.
So you were anti-war, Vietnam, correct?
I was just doing whatever I wanted to do, and the officers' wives liked me. So they would say to their husbands, you know, I like him. He's good. You know, let's keep him around. So I was just a little bit different.
Yeah,
you
right.
You know, than some of the other guys, because the format was top 40, country, beautiful music, and something else, and I played top 40. I mean, you know, give me those hits. That's what I wanted to play.
Yeah, right. That's what they wanted to hear anyway.
The kids, yeah.
Vietnam.
Our big listenership in Germany was the Shadows, the Germans. They all listened to us because they didn't have any radio like that. All they had was Luxembourg, incredible. And we were playing this, and that's how they learned English. And we were big guns over there.
Wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah, the Germans were listening every morning.
It's incredible.
We were 100,000 watts on AM at about 8 something, and we got into Paris and London. And you get some letters from behind the Iron Curtain, and you know, it just 100,000 watts. It's twice as big as anything here in the States, and it was on AM, so it was going out, man.
Yeah, it was just bouncing. Yeah. And the weather, the wind's blowing the right way, you could end up in Saudi Arabia, for God's sake.
First night I was on studio duty, I read a weather report that said road conditions red. That was the code word for a tank battalion to roll out. They rolled out. I made stars and stripes on that one. They rolled out, you know, because I said that on the air. But I mean, I was just reading, you know. So I got in trouble for that, but they rolled them out, yeah.
When you got dishonorably discharged, they're probably glad to see you go, right?
No, I made it through to the end. I actually thought about staying in because it was so cool, but they were going to send me back to
No,
the
I know. States. It was an honorable discharge, believe me. Yeah, it was you served your country, and thank you for that. I know you hear that, and I know sometimes you think, well, I really didn't. Well, you really did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you spent your time. And I think the other thing about you is you didn't graduate from college, correct?
I didn't.
Right there. And to me, there's always a lesson there about find something you love to do. Obviously, you started when you're 17 years old and do it. And somehow, some way, you're going to be a success at it.
I enrolled in the University of Texas for a few minutes, and the instructor said to me, you're in commercial radio? Yes. Well, we'll have to unlearn a lot of bad habits. And I said, okay. And then I enrolled in the San Antonio Junior College. But I just saw a quote from a guy named Scott Galloway, who's a professor at NYU, and he's written a book. And he said, and I thought, man, this is great. He said, some people tell you to pursue your passion.
Mm-hmm.
He said, people that tell you to pursue your passion are already rich. Pursue your talent. Pursue your talent, then you'll get some money, you'll get some recognition. Make sure you get into the top 10 of your profession. Then if you want to, you can pursue your passion. Pursue your talent. And that's what I think – I mean, I thought that made sense to me.
No, absolutely. Now, that's incredible. Pursue your talent. Yeah. I never thought about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, whatever you think you're good at, okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't – I'm not an artist. But I'd like to be, maybe, but I can't, you know, I can't.
That can be your passion later.
Yeah, that's my passion
later.
That's
not my talent.
Everybody else does it, so
I'll be doing stick people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I can't even do that.
So you get out of the military, and you end up, your first job is at Fort Worth?
I went to Dallas-Fort Worth. I tried to.
That's a pretty nice transition.
Yeah, I had a letter from one of the people with Plow Broadcasting. He was at Radio Voice of America while I was in Munich, and he liked me, and he gave me a letter, and I came back through, and I tried to call a guy, and he was in L.A., so I said, hey, I'm going to Dallas, and I went to Dallas, and I got a job at a big country station. The program director was Bill Mack, who was a big name and has become a big name in country music. He wrote Blue for Leon Rimes, and he was program director, and he was doing afternoons, and they wanted me to do mornings, so I did. And he came to me and he said, look, I want to play golf. I want to do mornings. You do afternoons. And I said, fine with me. So I did afternoons. But the manager said, I know you want to do rock and roll. There's an opening in Denver. They're going to put an FM on the air playing Top 40. And, you know, would you send them a tape? So I did. And they hired me. So I went to Denver by the fall of that year.
See, that's amazing that one guy would tell you, hey, there's a job in Denver.
Well, he knew I wanted.
Yeah, okay.
Badly,
yeah, but I mean, some of them don't care.
I know.
There's a lot of program directors or guys, station managers, but they don't care. They want to keep you because you are you, and that's why
they
got
guy.
You.
He was a good guy. I mean, and I went, and I stayed there for 9 years. I mean, I liked Denver a lot. Finally, we turned it into an album, Rock.
Okay,
Because the Summer of Love came along in 67 and all the album and singer-songwriters and everything, and I was fighting top 40s on FM, and the penetration wasn't there for nobody. You know, nobody had the FMs in their cars and all that stuff. And I turned it into an album. I was program director. I turned it into an album, Rock, and we did it till I got fired in 2000.
74,
late 73. And Ross Reagan, who was at DAF here, WDAF as the AM guy, had talked Tap Broadcasting into changing WDAF FM into an album, Rock. They were going to call it KISS.
KYYS. Right?
Yeah, well, it was going to be a female-oriented station. That's why they got those call letters. So when we came in, we said, eh.
I think
so. We called it KY-102, which everybody thought, oh, my God. Well, that, but it turned out to be a good
one. It really did. And before we leave Denver and we get to KC here for a while, That was the first time you got to play and interview new artists, right? Was that the first time in studio you'd get some new people in town that were playing
at
the, you know, wherever, the Denver, wherever they were playing? But you'd have in studio interviews with some of the biggest acts that there were around during that time on their way up.
Well, I'll be Jimi Hendrix and you be the interviewer. Okay. Ask me a question like I'm Jimi Hendrix.
Jimmy. We're sitting here in a, I think you rode around a Mustang, right? 65 Mustang? Were you with Jimi Hendrix? Okay. Jimmy, how are things?
Yes. Yes. I mean,
Jimmy, when did you start rock and roll?
I mean, you've had them, and you want to walk out.
That's right. Yes. Now, Hendrix answers.
Hendrix was big. We did a TV thing with him, and the famous 65 Mustang
trip. Ride, yeah.
You know, we had, but that was one of my least favorite interviews. Not him. He was okay, but Sissy Spacek. But we had everybody come in. We had everybody from the Fifth Dimension to Kurt Gustafson, who was one of my favorite guys in the world. I love him to death. And, Jackie DeShannon, and here comes Michael Nesmith from the Monkees, and here comes Waylon Jennings, and here comes, John Denver's hanging around the halls. And it's at Denver, everybody wanted to be in Denver. You know, I had jocks that were very good, and I wasn't paying any money, but they wanted to work in Denver, so they worked for me. And so it really worked out well. I just felt at that time that you just couldn't compete with the top 40s on FM. It was the wrong place at the wrong time. I think we did well, but it was a off-Broadway test for Kansas City. You know, I did everything that we wanted to do, so we knew what would work.
Yeah, sure, but then coming from – and, I mean, that was a huge and growing market.
Yeah.
Kansas City at the time was a much smaller – I think it was about 30 – around 30.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's right near with Milwaukee and Cincinnati, right? Yeah. Denver was like in the top 10 market-wise.
Well,
right?
Denver – when Ross called me and said, we want to do this, and I thought, I don't want to go east. I'm going to go west. But I came here, and I drove up Southwest traffic – Southwest Traffic Way toward Signal Hill. And I thought, it's kind of cool. I kind of like it here. And I just grew to like it. And I took the job and we did well. And it was just, we did everything from give away houses to we had a town change their name to Joe Montana.
That's right.
And we flew them to town for that. Yeah, and when the football – I was thinking about this the other day. When the football players went on strike, I don't know what year that was.
I forget. I should remember, but I think it was 83.
But we offered all the football players jocks, jock jobs. And they all came in and, you know, they did their shows. I mean, it was just great promotion. We were on the street doing all kinds of things. Moffat and I were out doing, you know, we were in the Channel 4 driveway one day in thongs. And people were blowing their horns, hogging their horns. And a guy, Ken Dillard, the engineer, thought it'd be really funny if he locked us out of the van, which he did. So we're beating on the van door saying, come on, let us in. Come on, we got to get in there. And we did what people most remember about us, I think, is probably Porky Piggin and also Smurfin. Well, Porky Piggin was –
we're on podcast, buddy. It's all good.
We had listeners come in, girls, and take off their pants, and then they would get into a limo, and we drive around to places they wanted us to come to, like garages, and of course, hey, and stuff like that. And so I'm lying there the first time we went out, Porky Piggin. I'm lying in the floor of the limo for some reason. And I'm looking and I'm thinking to myself, this ain't gonna work. We're going to get arrested. We're going to be arrested for this. So I changed it to Smurfing, where they would, you know, the Smurfs didn't wear any tops. So we'd go out with no tops, and we did a few times. But we did, I think the last time we did it, we went to Olathe, And we went to a Walmart out there, and we did a fire drill. And the girls, you know, like a Chinese fire drill, right. They went around, and they got back in the limo. And so we got, I guess, up two blocks. And the cops stopped us. And there must have been, I tell you what, there must have been five cop cars.
Oh, I bet there were.
And Moffitt was mad at me about something because I hadn't gotten out with him one day when we stopped with the cops. So he's in the back with the girls, and I'm in the passenger seat. So I got to get out and deal with the sergeant. And he said, what the man?
You got no top on.
And I'm saying, so they keep us there for 30 minutes. And as I kid you not, there's five cars, and they can't find a law that we broke. There is no ordinance. There's nothing. There's nothing. That's like mooning something. It's not a sexual thing.
Right.
So they let us go, but they said, don't come back here. And so they tried to write some kind of ordinance. I don't know if they ever did.
Go to Mission Hills next time.
Oh, my God.
it was crazy.
But you could get away with stuff in that day.
Well, here's the deal for you guys, too. You were so far ahead of the curve, too, because the way I looked at it when I used to hear you on the air all the time, you were already doing the making like it's a real commercial, but you were doing a spoof on a commercial, just like they do on Saturday Night Live now. Okay, and you're doing all the skits and all. This wasn't just about music. This was about entertainment. I mean, total entertainment. You'd come back out of a rock and roll song or whatever album oriented rock song, and then next thing you know, you're doing a commercial for band deodorant, and then it just went off the rails because it really wasn't about band. It was a skit. You guys did all that stuff all the time.
But you can't do that stuff
anymore. No, you can't do it anymore.
You can't do what we did.
No,
we did stuff. I don't even know how we got away with it. All the stuff we did.
Well, because there was no social media. That's the reason you get away with a lot of stuff.
Well, a lot of it. But we would. I remember somebody called one morning and said, my cat's in the tree, and I can't get my cat out of the tree. So Moffitt and I saddle up because we're not going to miss a morning saying, somebody get this pussy out of the tree. And we said it all morning. You know, you got to say that, you know. Hey, there's a pussy in the tree.
And
we
got to
get it out of there.
There was,
you know.
It wasn't against any FCC regulations. It's up the tree.
Take advantage of anything you can in those days.
Gosh.
Couldn't do it today.
Oh, no. There's just no way.
Isn't that funny?
It has changed. So just talk about that a little bit, about how much has changed. I know you left Kansas City for a while and then came back.
Yeah.
But how much the industry
I just – I really – Kansas City – I've lived – I've lived in, San Antonio.
I got most of America.
Dallas,
Clarksville, Sherman, Mineral Wells.
But the big cities.
San Antonio.
The big cities. Dallas, San Antonio, Denver, Chicago, Atlanta. I lived in all those towns when they were still manageable. I wouldn't live in any of them now. They're too big. They bother me. They absolutely they annoy me. Kansas City doesn't do that.
Yeah.
There's something about Kansas City. It just, you know, where'd you get that from? Bobby Bell? Is that what you?
Yeah, it was Bobby Bell. My wife Sarah.
It's just, of us could live anywhere we want. Yeah. I guess But what is it? I don't understand what it is. It's something about this town that just grabs you.
Yeah, it does. And I think I'm the same way because when I came here in 1981. I wasn't going to be here very long. I was maybe 3 years or something. Then I'm from the East Coast, so I figured I'll go back to my hometown, Pittsburgh, maybe Philadelphia, maybe on this new thing called ESPN, whatever that thing is, and all that sort of stuff. And even CNN then had the guys late at night. They had the sports. They had an hour or two of sports at night then, so they were big into it as well.
But you knew you were going to move up. You were going to go.
I was going to go. I was like everybody else. It's Kansas City in Missouri.
Yeah,
Kansas.
Yeah.
Where the hell's Kansas City?
Yeah, yeah.
You just figured out.
If you don't know it, you just don't know it.
You don't know it. That's exactly what I say because all my friends ask me all the time. They say, "What? Well, why'd you stay there all that time?" I said, "There's just something about Kansas City." And I think it comes down to – there's a lot of things, but it really comes down to the people. I mean,
it really comes down to
people. They're salt-of-the-earth people. I mean, they're giving. They are philanthropic. They are they're industrious. They're entrepreneurs. They're thinkers.
But don't you think it's that way in other cities too? I guess not.
I think they outgrow it. I think they think that's quaint or trite.
I absolutely hate Denver now, and I loved Denver. in the 70s.
Yeah.
I loved it. And now it's like, what have you done to this town? What have you done to this city? Yeah. Building all these things on the mountains with these big stilts and, you know, and stuff like that.
It just, I love the mountains.
Oh, I love it.
I love the mountains.
I'm more of a mountain guy than I am an ocean guy, I think.
Yeah, but, same here.
I love the mountains. I'd like to live in the mountains. But it's just, there's something about this whole town. And I lived it. We lived it. We came in 74, and we didn't take any prisoners. We really didn't. We were everywhere. We covered concerts like they were the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. We had a Spy in the Sky. We had, in those days, we were doing reports from the payphones outside the gates, and we had walkie-talkies, and we were doing a show from inside and so forth. We just blanketed it. We covered it. We were there. We knew what we were doing. Anytime there was anything. If they opened this, when they redid the 75th Street Bridge over in Merriam and Overland Park, Frankie and I were on top of that bridge broadcasting.
Frankie Hutchinson.
Anywhere else, you know, there was a place, we'd be there broadcasting. And that's what you have to
do. Yeah, you took it on the road, which I think is fantastic.
You could probably still do it today, but they're not going to do it today.
No, they don't want to leave the studio. They don't want to spend any money.
Well, they're usually in their house.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the deal was, too, you left for some big cities, like you said. You left. And
I had to go.
And then all of a sudden, you come back.
Well, I had to go to Chicago. The consultant said, you know, you're number one. You're number one. You either got to go to Los Angeles, Chicago, or New York, and there's an opening in Chicago. And I thought about it for a month, and I went to Munich, and I, you know, they kept calling me, and I, oh, God, I don't know. I don't want to go. I love it here. But I finally took the job, and I walk into the manager's office, and he says, make sure you got enough money in your pocket to bribe the cops, because when you go down to the, you know, the lakefront, you may need to grease a few palms. And it's the first place I ever worked where you had a bar in the building. It worked. It was just different. And we'd take, you know, 3 or 4 hour lunch hours and stuff like that. I lived like I had to commute by train, and I'd get lost in the train, and I'd wind up in some place that didn't speak English, you know. And I liked Chicago almost. It was more manageable than Atlanta. Atlanta was really not manageable to me at all. People were crazy in Atlanta, the driving and so forth.
Oh, yeah, driving's crazy. But you went from Chicago to Atlanta, and you didn't stay in either town very long.
No, I was going to Portland. I got a job in Portland after Atlanta, and Bob Garrett, the manager, flew down and said, why don't you come back and do mornings on KY? And I said, okay, so I came back.
Anyway, so and then the rest is history.
I stayed here from 83 to 2007.
Yeah, Max Tanner and Moffitt.
Yeah, I also took a job in Houston once and San Diego, and I didn't go. But Houston, Houston is just like, ooh.
Talking about traffic.
Yeah, I went to school there, so I
didn't. You're a Texan.
Yeah, I am. I'm of Texas. Yeah. They say you're not from Texas. You're of Texas, and that's true. I feel that way.
Yeah, right. And mom, Nettie, right?
Nettie Lois,
And dad's name is Sam Houston.
I should have used that Sam name Houston. In Texas. Why didn't I use that?
You know what I was going to ask you? Did you ever try and, like a lot of disc jockeys use aliases, you know, Wolfman Jack.
Johnny Young in San Antonio.
Oh, were you really? Yeah, okay, so you did change your name.
Well, and I was not so Pretty Boy Floyd in Dallas. But I never used, and I was the Blue Max in Denver for a while, and that's about the only time I ever changed my name. I should have. I had a classmate whose name was Buddy Malone. I thought, God, what a great name, Buddy Malone. Buddy Malone.
Right. I had a friend of mine's name, Murray Marlier.
Oh.
And I went, oh, my God. I said, that'll be my radio name. Yeah. That's a name, but I never changed.
Why didn't I? When I went to San Antonio, the program director said, you're Johnny Young. Give me a dollar, you know, because he was, you know, he wanted to make sure I didn't use it somewhere else or whatever. But he wanted me to use Johnny Young. But why didn't I use Sam Houston? That would have been a great Texas name,
perfect,
you know.
For Texas radio.
Yeah. I should have used Max Whitney instead of Max Floyd.
Well, what was it like growing up in Texas, small town Texas?
Great. I grew up in the 50s. And,
yeah, sure.
Idyllic. The formative years, they tell me, is what, 15, something like that? Mm-hmm. And that's when you form your music choices and so forth. So I was early 50s pop listening to Perry Como and Patti Page, and I love
Ray
that.
Conniff.
Ray Conniff. And along came – and Joe Stafford. And along came rock and roll. And about, what, 55, 54, 55, yeah. And all that rhythm and blues. And
yeah.
There was a blues rhythm and blues show out of Paris, Texas, and the guy would come on and say, hello, all you hound dogs, bear cats, and cool chicks. You know, it's time for, and so forth. And that's why I maybe want to be on the radio, you know.
Sure.
There was a guy in San Antonio whose name is Ricky Ware. Ricky Ware, your rocking ghost, your musical host. You know, they just did that in the Art of Roberts and all these guys. It just made me – I don't know where you got your appetite for radio, but
yeah.
I'd listen to those guys. What are my – I guess my biggest the disc jockey out at most was a guy named Rex Miller. I used to work for Cliff in Dallas. He grew up in St. Joseph, and he and I went to Elkins together, engineering school together, and he was a funny guy, but he had an act. And his act would wear out in about 3 months. He'd have to go to another station, you know. So, you know, you got to watch kind of stuff like that. But I like Paul Harvey. I always thought that.
See, you liked the news. You liked – you just didn't like rock and roll. The whole earth.
Yeah.
You just liked
the
whole –
I like these guys that would make an impression on you.
Yes,
you know?
Really. Yeah.
And I'm sure you did, too. I don't know who your go-to guy was for sports.
Well, right. Well, for TV, it was Bill Burns.
And really?
He was the original anchor man in the entire country at KDK TV in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And his son was a good friend of mine, and that's where I met Bill. And Bill would always say to me, you know what? You might be pretty good on TV someday, son. And I'm going, you know, I'm 16, 17 years old. I'm thinking about it.
But are these the guys that don't really know how good they are? Sometimes they don't know how good they are.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I think
I don't think you ever knew how good you were. Yeah. I doubt that you did because you're
I never
so
really thought about it because I always thought, probably like you, I'm surrounded by great people. And I think that was the important thing. I mean, you know, I could have tried to do it by myself, but there's no way it was going to happen like that. So I learned that early on. But when I was growing up, I loved music, okay? And I grew up right through the same time you did. Rock and roll, the whole deal. I was born in 47, so by 55 or 60, I mean, we're in the middle of the Beatles are going to be coming in and all that. But I grew up with Porky Chadwick. I don't know if you ever heard of
Porky Chadwick.
From Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Your platter pushing poppy, your bar sauce without sauce, making your knees freeze, your liver shivering, your bladder splatter.
I tell you, man, those were great guys,
they
you know.
Were great guys.
I had lunch once with Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg, who was from Boston. And I heard the name many times. We had lunch at one of the luncheons for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was, you know, but when I went to when I went to the Hall of Fame, I went to one lunch. Scott Muni was there. Cousin Brucey was there. Dick Biondi was there. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, my God, these guys.
Was Wolfman Jack? Do you remember? You remember Wolfman Jack?
I remember
obviously,
Wolfman
right?
Jack. I never met Wolfman Jack.
Right.
Never
there was Casey Kasem.
Casey Kasem was there.
Howard Stern.
Never met Howard Stern.
He was an original jock.
He was
a disc jockey. Yeah. And then he became Howard Stern. And Wolfman and Bruce Morrow, I think.
Cousin Brucey, there's a picture of me somewhere with Cousin Brucey, and I can't find it. I want to find it so bad. It was at that luncheon, and we had a little thing after, and Peter Wolf from Jed Giles Band was there playing around, and so was Bo Diddley.
Oh,
Bo
God.
Diddley was there playing that square guitar. It was, you know, it's
and the stuff you see sometimes when you do it, like you know, or Elvis Presley. I mean, you know,
I've been Elvis.
But, right. You met Elvis.
But here's the way you meet Elvis. And the guy who did Kentucky Rain, he wrote Kentucky Rain. He's a big star. But anyway, they asked him if he wanted to meet Elvis because he was in Vegas seeing him. And he said, yeah, okay. Eddie Rabbit is who I'm talking about. And so they went downstairs. And there in the labyrinth of the under the stairs – you have a checkpoint every 1,000 feet or something like that, right? And they say, who are you, and so forth. And then you get to the Elvis room, and there's a bunch of people there, and Elvis is there, and all the people are there. And to meet Elvis, and this happened to me the same way I did. You go in, and you see Elvis, and somebody calls him over and says, hey, man, how you doing? And then he's gone.
He's gone,
That's
yeah.
what you're doing,
That's
you know?
It. And we a little handshake.
One of my friends from here who was in record business, after we met Elvis, we went across the river in Las Vegas to see Johnny Paycheck. And those, I had hair down to my shoulders in those days, and so did he. And we went into, and all the locals were in this bar watching Paycheck. And as we walked in, you could hear the rumbling, you know, because these guys were like steel workers and all this. These guys didn't have long hair in Las Vegas, and they were, I don't know how many it was going to take to throw us out, but I knew how many they had. And they, Johnny Paycheck came down because he knew us, and he came down off the bandstand and said, these guys are mine. They're okay.
Yeah, right. They're probably, they were the guys building the buildings in Las Vegas, guys who are in there spending all their money in Las Vegas. Yeah, absolutely. You have a great story about an interview with Paul McCartney.
You know, interviews over the years, the worst was Todd Rundgren and John Mellencamp. I just didn't get along at all. McCartney was very nice, and he would cut little promos for your station and do that stuff. So we're backstage at Kemper, and Linda's there, and we're talking, and we're doing a little interview thing, and he's not saying much, and I'm thinking, this is really weird, you know? He's usually, but Linda leaves the room, and then he opens up. He just, like, he talks all that. Well, I don't know why she was – maybe she was going, you know,
trying to watch his image, maybe more, not just, knowing that being a real human being.
Paul McCartney said, I thought it was a funny thing. Paul McCartney said, when people ask me all I've done, I don't really know how to explain it, but Paul McCartney's over here and I'm here. You know, he just, he takes that away from himself. It's something else I did. So
yeah.
That's a good way to do it, I guess. If you've done that much stuff, my God, think of it. Think of all the stuff he's written and done.
Oh, geez, just a genius.
I just heard a Beatles record the other day called I'm a Loser, and John Lennon couldn't sing too well.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Paul could sing, but I don't think
the four of them together.
And I hate
great.
To say that to all you John Lennon fans. I know I love him too, but sometimes he just couldn't sing.
Yeah, we won't even talk about Yoko. Okay, at this point.
Outside.
Okay.
When we Tan and I did a couple of broadcasts for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have a whole radio studio in there, and outside the door, one time we were up there, is this table and a chair and a telephone on it. And if you called that number that was on it, you got to talk to Yoko, maybe. It's just, you know, she'd answer sometimes, and sometimes she wouldn't. I never tried because I didn't want to hear her screaming. But, you know, she could. I guess it was just a setup, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Sorry.
How about Janis Joplin?
I was in love with Janis Joplin. I know she wasn't really that good looking. But
there was something else about her.
There was something about her. Just raw, you know.
Yeah.
I just thought, I don't know. I don't know why I felt that way about her. And I felt kind of funny for thinking it. Everybody'd say, have you looked at her? I said, well, yeah, but, you know, she was just such a force.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt that way about Bette Midler. I would have gone on road with Bette Midler. You know, she was here in Kansas City for a while, and we were down that little room down there for a while before you got here. In the corner with all that glass on it and so forth. And Bob Garrett said he was trying to get her to talk to him one day, and she came around there and looked in and said, where's Max? So it was just – I mean, I would have – she's just fine. I loved her.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean,
you got it. And Elton John.
Well, I was in Denver, and this guy worked for me he had done some writing for the he went to CU or Denver University, one or the other. He was Denver University, and he was doing some writing for him, and Mike Eisner. And he came in one day. He'd been to Europe, and he'd gotten the first Queen album, and he brought that back with him. We played that first, which made Queen play Denver for the first show they ever did in the United States.
Wow.
And he came up to me. I was upstairs in the office. He said, listen, I want you to meet this guy. I'm taking him around. I'm writing a little article on him, and I really think you should meet him. I said, listen, Michael, I am so busy. I cannot do anything now. He said, please, I just want you to. I said, okay. All right, bring him on up. So he brought him in. He said, Max, this is Elton John. I almost missed Elton John because I was too busy.
You probably needed the bidet for a moment right there, right?
Yeah, you're right, boy. I tell you, it's you never know in this business, you know, who you're going to meet run across. Yeah. But these are big stars.
Yeah, just always amazing stuff. And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your cohorts. Tan, of course, Moffitt, the whole crew, and just the way the three of you, morphed into Max Tan and Moffitt.
Yeah, Tan and I worked together for a long time with different people like John Hart and, and some other people. And then Moffitt was added to the show later, but Tan and I worked together, and then she followed some guy to Miami and quit for a while, and then she came back. And Tan and I love each other dearly, and we could answer each other's questions, and we can finish our sentences and all that stuff. And Moffitt came along, and of course Moffitt Moffitt and I were both probably type A personalities, which mm-hmm. is a little tough, but we made it work. It was, you know, we were together for so long.
Yeah.
We made it work. I'd make him mad because I wouldn't, you know, we would dress like girls and go up to the Quick Trip and, you know, and we just, Frank, we just did everything. I mean, I don't know what we didn't do, you know. I don't
know. There wasn't anything you didn't do. You're lucky the FCC didn't throw you off the air.
I know. We did some stuff that they should have thrown us off.
Oh, heck yeah. Even back in those days. But, yeah, they were just terrific. And then some of your, I don't know, other people who have been famous here in Kansas City, Skid Roadie, for one.
Skid's great. Skid did mornings with me for a while.
Yes.
And the consultants came to town and said, well, you got these two guys on at the same time? And I said, but Skid in the afternoon. And Skid was great. I love Skid. I saw him not long ago.
Yeah. And what about Fred Rocks? Crazy Fred Rocks?
Ended up
marrying Cynthia Smith and it ended up being a disaster. But that's, you know.
I never understood that.
I didn't either.
But Turner, they had a great kid. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you worked with Cynthia for a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
Fred Rocks was a different kind of guy, and I had this big Gilbert O'Sullivan shirt on one day, a G on it, and Gilbert O'Sullivan did a song called Alone Again, Naturally, or something like that. But I was wearing it, and some guy came in who was looking for me, and not in a nice way. And Fred Rocks is up in front and is in that little building there by Channel 4. And he said, is Max here? He said, yeah, he's back there with that big G on his shirt back there. I said, Fred Rocks. But Herndon had to hire I had an armed guard for a week, which was great. I loved that.
He had an armed guard for a week?
Yeah, I had a weapon on. I loved it.
That was
great.
What was the deal?
There was somebody bothering me. I finally went to court or something. It was
somebody threatened you?
Yeah, I don't remember it exactly. I just remember having a guard. It was okay. I got a guard here. You know, what I've been killed.
Hey, I'm Max. I need a guard. Okay, where's the limo? Limo, bring up the stretch. Bring it up.
No limos, man.
Frankie Hutchinson. Frankie. Whew. Married Bill Moss.
Yeah. Frankie, we had a lot of shouting matches, and Frankie was a volatile person, and Herndon mm-hmm. would have to come in, the manager of the station, come in sometimes and say, we're in the room where we're planning next day's show or something. What's going on? I loved her. God, mm-hmm. we were good friends and everything else, but we would have shouting matches.
Yeah.
And we went to we were doing a skiing trip once in Winter Park, I think it was, and the program director and Frankie and I went up to check out the skiing and so forth, and we were in this big, huge condo, and it was just one big room, and Frankie got an extra room, and I'm outside, and so is the program director, and Bill Moss, that son of a – he called every minute, every night. Frankie there?
Yeah.
Bill, you got to let go, man.
Relax.
Yeah, the phone is ringing. We're trying to get some sleep. And then they went on the skiing trip with us, and I had a habit of not – see, you're supposed to mingle with the people, but I have a habit – I rented a car and didn't go up on the bus, and as I was pulling out with my wife and daughter, I saw those two pressed up against the window with their faces going, whoa, where are you going, you know, is Bill. But I just couldn't. Moffitt and I – when we went to Cancun a couple of times with the morning show, Max Tan and Moffitt, and – We checked into this one hotel. It was terrible. My wife just wouldn't. She wouldn't take off her shoes. I'm going to put towels down. I can't stay in this place. So we went next door to this really nice hotel, and we're checking in. I look around me, and Moffitt and Joyce are coming by me to check in. And we have our own private beach, and Tan and Jeff, you know, her husband are like over entertaining all those
They're
people.
They're out there with the unwashed. Yeah.
We're like, hey, how you doing? So, Max has got to have his comforts, right?
That's
right. Please.
That's right. And you know, I mean, you did. I mean, radio was good to you. I mean, radio was really good to you.
We had a good time. Okay, I mean, you know, it was great. You know, and it's funny, too, that because you have energy. And you always had energy. And that's what maybe you're just normally that way. I don't know.
I think so.
I'll have to ask Sarah that. I mean, I don't know what you are.
I go home and take a nap. Yeah.
But I'm not that way. I'm that guy over in the corner, you know, saying, what time, you know, when do we leave here and so forth. And I'm like a ghost at parties. Where's Max?
He left,
I guess. But I'm just not that way. So I got to get up for it. I did an act for 50 years, you know, as that. And that's the way it is.
For 4 hours a day at least. And then preparing and then post-production.
I'm
and
just
doing
not that way. You catch me somewhere and it'd be like, okay. You know, that's not what you do. That's not what you can do.
I'm going to give John Hart a shout out here because John was the guy. You had Bill Moss. We'll go back to Bill Moss. John invited Bill Moss in to, it almost became, it wasn't the original Sports Talk, but on FM, you know, they were doing it, I think Don Fortune or whatever, doing stuff over at 980. But on FM, nobody was doing sports anything. And John invited Billy in when the Chiefs started to get a little bit better there through the early 80s. And then, you know, Marty came in later, but Billy was a pretty big deal. First round draft choice. He's a big player. He's a great guy. Got a lot of personality.
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Bill. And so Hart says, hey, Frank, he calls me one day over at the TV station. Hey, listen, I got Bill Moss coming in here. I don't have the slightest idea what to ask him. And I went, what are you doing, John? He said, I'm having Bill Moss. And one of the Chiefs, you got to come over and help me out. I don't know what I'm going to ask him. I said, John, you'll be fine. He said, no, you got to come over. So I went over, and that morphed me into then getting around to the 810 stuff and all the stuff I was doing. Yeah. Went over, Fortune had me on a few times. And then the sports talk radio starts buzzing in the back of your head, you know, type thing. But it was John who got me over to then sit in with Bill Moss.
Isn't that
and,
cool?
And then John would leave the room. John just get up and leave. God. He was sitting there at the microphone. Next thing you know, he'd get up.
So you're friends with Bill now.
Oh, I've been friends with Bill forever. Bill's from Philadelphia, right down the street from Villanova.
Well, you know,
where I went to school, and then he went to Pitt, which is in my hometown.
John Hart traveled with the Chiefs.
Yes, he did.
For a long time.
Yeah, he did.
He's got some of the greatest Bill Grigsby stories there ever was. And Lynn Dawson.
Yeah.
You know.
I'll have to drag John here someday.
You know what? I just talked to Bill Grigsby's daughter, who is still pissed that they moved his statue from right there at the entrance of Parkville up in the there. Why did they do that? I don't understand.
You know what?
That.
I have no idea why they do stuff they do.
But
it's
Bill
crazy.
Grigsby did a lot for that town.
He was
for everything else.
He was their biggest promoter. Yeah. He loved Parkville. Yeah, he just,
you know, we've seen some big personalities in this town.
Oh gosh,
you know? He and I think of all the time. Did you know Rita Channon?
No.
She was before you.
She was before me.
Yeah. Some of the Channel 4 had some great people, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And with all you guys.
Yeah,
but,
it was crazy.
And then still do, but now it's a little different.
Yeah, TV's so different now. Yeah. How has radio changed? I don't even know if you listen anymore, because everybody now listens on Spotify and iHeartRadio, and they listen to all the streaming services. They really, it's tough. A lot of people don't listen to music on radio because they're commercials.
But you know what? They just did a survey, and outside of the 18 to 24s, which chose hip-hop, the biggest format in all of the survey was classic rock.
Wow.
No, all the way up through all the demographics. And that's why the Fox still does so well, because they're the only game in town playing classic rock, and they're still trying to get – the younger demos and not just the 55 plus. There's a guy that used to do some stuff with me who has a 55 plus format in I think Tucson or somewhere like that, or Phoenix, and he's doing well. But how are you going to sell it? You know, that's the trouble. I mean, there are a lot of us around, but they just don't want that demographic. But I think radio has just – the local has gone out of it. You just don't – I mean, you don't know if these people are local or not most of the time. I think with the demise of Slacker, there is no iconic radio people left. Steve Garrett's still over there, but this just all changed and different. Mm-hmm. And how do you really know all those stories? The way classic rock does so well is if you've got jocks like Jim Ladd and all these people out of L.A. and all these old guys, and even me maybe. Mm-hmm. But if you're telling stories, that's what they want. They want the stories.
They want the ones we told about Matt Miller and Janis Joplin.
Yeah, they want the music.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, then you're fine. But if you're just going to hire some younger person who doesn't really know or doesn't really know Kansas City,
right,
it's kind of hard to do. We know what's happened here. We know the way we feel. We love the town. I'm talking to you and you and you. I'm not talking to your roommate or anybody else. I'm talking to you.
Right.
You know, it's just a really dramatic and intimate thing to do on the radio. And I think radio has changed, not for the better, obviously, but the classic rock is still there. Pete Mundo on
I know Pete.
And he had you on. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to him about your podcast, this podcast, and he said to me, because I talked to him at one of those luncheons we had, and I told him something I shouldn't have told him, and he said, why don't you tell me what you told me on there about, you know, about the station and so forth, about the classic rock and so forth. I said, I'm not going to do that, Pete. I got friends in this town. I'm not going to tell you what I told you, you know.
Exactly,
I don't,
right.
Yeah, I mean.
Keep it calm. And I think that's the other thing. And I think this happened to the athletes, which you don't get to do anymore because you don't get to know them anymore, okay? Did the show with Billy and then Tim Grunhardt and I, we did that show for a long time at the Levee. And
I love Grunhardt. We had did a show with him for a long time.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, those guys got to know us. We got to know them. And then when the mics shut off and we told stories and we were talking about stuff, we knew what we could talk about and what we just kept to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and they trusted us.
Brett loved to do morning shows on KY.
Yeah.
He wanted to play, I want to play My Old School by Steely Dan. Okay. Sure,
yeah, right,
George.
Right. Well, I did a show with him on 810. We did 2 hours in the morning over at 810 for a long time. It's George Brett.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't have to come in here and sit down with
That's
me and
right.
do 2 hours of radio. You know, it's so different. What would you even recommend anybody to be a DJ or if they were going to do it, how they would do it? It's going to be AI pretty soon, isn't it? Isn't it going to just be
– I think if it's legal, you know.
Yeah, right.
A friend of mine in St. Louis, John D. Rabbit, somebody approached him to let them do some AI with his voice and so forth. He said, well, it's going to be a lot of money if you want to do that. Now, I don't know if they can control it or what, you know. I even had, those Max Floyd Rock and Roll Army T-shirts, which we had from 1980, I guess, with the Rock and Roll Army. And they're not available. You know, there's one on eBay for $500.
Holy gosh.
But nobody's bought it. Bought it. I have one. I may let those go again. They want me to let them go again, and maybe people. We have about 12,000. Randy Raley has about 12,000 to 13,000 people on that KY Facebook fan page, and there's a big reunion coming up at Knuckleheads on June 28th, 50th anniversary. KUI would have been 50 years old, and all those people still remember, and it was their formative years and so forth. And so I think that'll be a big deal. I may release those T-shirts.
Yeah, you got to get somebody down at the kiosk at the Knuckleheads.
Yeah, so, right.
I don't think you're going to get $500 a piece, but you could certainly make a few dollars out of it. Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions as we finish up here, and I'm so appreciative of you coming in to sit down with me. But we've been friends for a long, long time. But favorite artist or band?
You expect me to say rock?
No, I expect you to tell me what your favorite.
Mills Brothers.
You're kidding me.
No.
That's unbelievable. Wow.
Dean Martin's favorite. They're the best that I've ever heard. You know, I've never seen anything quite like that. Professionalism and so forth.
That's amazing. I was thinking it's going to be like, Elton John or the Stones.
I like all those
guys. No, I understand that.
I mean, if I,
that's incredible.
I just, they're before my time. But,
yes.
But still, I'm allowed to go back and look at some of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, you obviously were brought up somewhere. You heard it somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, as you were growing up, those formative years. I still remember my Uncle Jack. He used to play Ray Conniff all the time, the Ray Conniff singers.
Yeah.
He'd stand up. This was in the 60s, and the kids are all doing rock and roll and the Beatles and everything else. He'd stand up, and he had beams in the ceiling. Those were pretty low in his house. And he'd get his fist and he'd punch the beams and go, "Now that is music, not that trash you're listening to."
It's so subjective, isn't it? It really is. Who's your favorite?
I love Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when I was in Philadelphia and I was at Villanova, and then I stayed there for a few more years coaching football. But they had a station in Philadelphia, WMMR. Never forget it.
Sure.
It was Sinatra. 24 hours. And sometimes he was with his daughter singing, with Nancy and but he was all the big band stuff and live stuff and all that. And it was 24 hours a day on WMMR in Philadelphia.
That's got to affect you.
Oh, gosh. I loved it.
Did you ever see him live?
Oh, I saw him live twice.
Oh, great.
Once in Lake Tahoe and once at the Kemper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Saw him twice. So
I love Summer Wind.
Oh, gosh.
It's one of my favorite songs ever with that.
Yeah. There are,
I just love that. I love all that stuff. You know, it's just great. And a lot of times you can hear Sinatra and you just go way off somewhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Send In the Clowns.
Yeah. Oh, God. Great song.
Unbelievable song. Yeah. Just great stuff. It's great. And, of course, we've talked about Kansas City. Your love for KC. You're still here. You could have gone back to Texas. You could have gone basically anywhere. And you did go to a lot of places. And you always returned. And I know, what is it about Kansas City? I think we discussed it, but...
You know, I think it's the people. I think it is the people. All those years, those magic years from 74 to about 80, it was just it put an imprint on my mind, and I could never get off. It's one of those things. I love those kids. They'd come in. We did Disco Destruction for a long time, and that's how it really was great. And those kids would come in from Raytown, and they'd drive a red pickup to the back of Channel 4, and I'd go outside and get on top of that damn pickup, and we'd have a rally out there every day, blowing up disco records. They just loved us, and we loved them,
You loved them back.
Yeah, and, they could get you on the phone. We could talk to them on the phone, and we did. And they don't do it anymore. You got a guy sitting there doing live radio, and you're talking to you on the phone, and you know he's talking to you on the phone. And it's just amazing that it works out that way. I love Kansas City anyway. I know – that it's kind of hidden out here, in the middle of the country.
Which is okay.
Yeah, which is okay. And it's growing, and you can't get to a lot of places maybe with a flight unless you lay over somewhere. But I don't know. I like the seasons. Sometimes it gets too hot for me, but, it gets hot everywhere. So
sure.
I just love the town. I love the town. I love that you're still here. I love the people that I still see that I'm able to talk to. And, Duron Cherry was at Slacker's thing,
Yeah,
and
I thought,
my God, but he does a lot of work for Cars for Heroes. So,
He is a good man. He's done a lot of stuff for kids too.
Yeah.
With his, his Score One for Health.
But think of all the guys you could still pick up the phone and call.
If
you want to call Gary Lezak, you can call Gary Lezak, even though he's in Denver.
I'm tired of talking to Gary Lezak. Okay. I work with him at 41
to him
for too long.
But
he stole so much of my time at 41. Don't get me started on Gary Lezak. Okay.
So you were at Channel 4 for how many years?
I was in, from 81 till 2009. I think it was.
That's one of my favorite buildings. When we were in
that building,
we moved over to the little house over there. When we were in that building, I enjoyed it so very much. One time, Eddie Money came in, and I took him down to the Channel 4 Christmas party, which was right there in the studios. And it was wonderful. Everybody had a good feeling about it.
Sure.
And you could walk in the building then without having to be, ID'd. and so forth. So I had a good time, And I've had a good time, and I guess I'm still having a good time. Sometimes I get out on the floor, I can't get up, but, you know, that's just the way it is.
Join the crowd.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the way it goes.
I don't feel sorry for you.
But you've had a good time here, and you had a good time in this town.
I've had a wonderful time, and this is something that my wife had this idea, and she said, you know what, this town's been wonderful to us. We have to give something back.
There's something about Kansas City.
Something about Kansas City. And wait, you're one of those things, buddy.
Are you, you've always been able to get another job in this town. I mean, you went from 4 to 5, right?
No, I went from 4 to 41.
To 41.
41, then 41.
Well, that was when
was
Jack Carey was at 41?
Yeah, well, yeah. And Jack and I worked together for 5 years.
Oh, 41.
Years.
Okay, okay.
And then Jack retired and I took over that. His last couple of years.
I've never been able to get another job in a town that I'm in. I've never been able to move to another station.
Oh, that's wild.
I've always
yeah.
had to leave.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know why.
It's because you're way bigger and way more important than I am.
No, I just was never able to. People hated me.
Yeah.
Can't help it because you hate me. Don't cry for me, Kansas City.
That's absolutely right. Well, Max, you are a treasure for this town. So glad you came in here to share your story. It's just been incredible. And you are one of the reasons there's something about Kansas City, my friend.
Well,
thanks.
You're one of the best in the world, hey. Frank, and I love you. Man, I really do. There really is something about Kansas City. Glad I'm here.
Love you, too. Thanks. Max Floyd, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.